Welcome to Happily Ever After is just the beginning. Keeping your relationship not just together, but happy, and we mean truly happy, is part art and part science. You've come to the right place. Here's your host, Leslie Dorries.
You know, it's really interesting because there are a lot of different kinds of metaphors that people just in general and people who work in my field use in relation to marriage. And I often refer to the adjustments that two people have to make to each other as a three-legged race. You know, each person has to adjust their stride and find one that works for both of them. And another common metaphor for marriage is, you know, thinking of marriage as a dance. And one of the leaders in our field, Dr. Sue Johnson, describes marriage as a constant process of tuning in, connecting, missing and misreading cues, disconnecting, repairing, and finding deeper connection. It is a dance of meeting and parting and finding each other again, minute to minute and day to day. And I'm not sure that there's a better metaphor for marriage out there than that one. But quite often, each partner is intent on doing their own dance, which might make it work at the local club, but it makes for a lot of stepped on toes in real life. So to talk about how you and your partner can rival the pros on Dancing with the Stars, I'm joined by fellow marriage and family therapist, Hannah Eaton. Hannah, thanks so much for coming on the show and talking about this in this kind of aspect.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks so much, Leslie, for having me on today.
And part of the reason why is because I read your piece, recent piece entitled Marriage is a Dance, and you use this metaphor. And so what was it about this metaphor that you found particularly relevant?
Yeah, great question. So I think first it just feels so natural to use dance as a metaphor for marriage. Thinking about that question a little bit further, I break it down into three main reasons. I think one of the first parts is that dance is pretty easy to relate to. You know, we can find it across different cultures. And even if you're not a dancer yourself, I think most people can appreciate dance, which is probably part of the reason that show Dancing with the Stars is so popular. So I think it's really relatable. I think it's also just a very loaded metaphor. You know, that quote you shared by Sue Johnson is so powerful in and of itself. And then I think as you start to explore the metaphor further, you realize that it's really full of micro-metaphors. So I know as I was kind of like to call it that. I know as I started dancing more with my husband, I was just so shocked by all of the different small metaphors that were coming up, and I could just pick them up just throughout our dance. So just so loaded, and you could break it down in so many different ways. And then I think I love dance as well because it can be more than a metaphor. I think the process of dance itself can be very therapeutic and transformative in relationships. So I love that, you know, you can use it in language or in conversation, but you can actually get couples on the dance floor and a very positive change can actually occur through the physical process of it.
Well, yeah, because they're able to embody the concept in their own bodies and in their own movement. And it's really interesting. I was just having a conversation with a friend of mine earlier today, completely unrelated to this, where she was talking about intimacy as being much more easy to accomplish, you know, that, you know, physicality, sexuality, because it's movement and breathing, which anybody who's danced understands that it's movement and it's breath and it's all of these things. And and we move and breathe all the time, but not necessarily with intention. But if you're taking a dance class, which is partially what you talked about in the article about you starting to do a ballroom dance class with your husband, that you're now having to move intentionally.
Yeah, so true.
The steps are all laid out there if you're doing the cha-cha or the foxtrot or the tango or whatever it is you're doing. And you know, I don't think we all necessarily have to go into, a week worth of just, you know, intense practice like they do in Dancing with the Stars, because we actually have a little bit more time than a week. But the whole concept, mm-hmm. I think, is the same.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that. It's so powerful just getting out of our minds and getting into our bodies and applying those principles. And I think there's just a much deeper learning process that can go on when you actually bring in that physical experience as well and connect it with the emotional and the mental.
Mm-hmm. So everybody should have to take dance lessons before they get married.
Exactly.
In the article, you talk about four things that became more than metaphors, and maybe these are the micro metaphors you were talking about for you that I would really love you to talk about. So one of them, the first one, is you talk about taking turns as a leader and a follower, which from a dance metaphor sounds really funny because most people think of it as, you know, the husband or the man being the leader. But I know that in some of the ballroom classes that I've taken, they actually have you switch. Did they have you do that in your class as well?
Yeah, they did. So our teacher, Michael of Slow Dance Studios, had us start out at the very beginning of the lesson taking turns, and he told us why he thought this was so important and that we need to have a greater understanding of each of the roles and how we experience them to have a deeper connection and to have a greater understanding. And how that will ultimately help us to have a more harmonious dance. So, and I personally had never experienced that before. My husband and I had taken a few other dance classes, and it was always just the male is in the leader role and female mm-hmm. steps into the follower role. So when he had us switch and take turns, I instantly just found that so powerful. And, yeah, we started to explore all these different metaphors and lessons through that process.
Well, and it's really interesting because there's an art to leading and there's an art to following. And I think mm-hmm. that's, and I love this taking turns as leader and follower, because in a marriage we have different roles. And by the way, that's not necessarily, that they don't necessarily have to follow traditional gender roles, although they can. But we all have varying roles in our marriage. And in good marriages, you know, we want to be able to lead our partner or follow our partner in whatever the role is that they're taking on. But I think that can be a real struggle for people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. I think it definitely can be a struggle. And we bring our own personal views on what our roles are into marriage. And we bring in cultural and societal views and the views of our family. And so, yeah, I think it can be difficult to know exactly what roles do we step into. Do we want to have similar roles to what our parents had in their own marriage if they were together? Or do we want to break free from those roles? And what does it look like? And how do we play that out in our relationship?
And I don't think people talk about it much, because I do know, and it's not the always role, but I do hear a lot of women talk about, you know, that they take on the role of being the social directors in their relationship. So that's a woman or a wife stepping into the leadership role and having the husband follow, and then there might be some other ways where, you know, the husband is in the leadership role and the woman's following. And there really has to be a real sense of trust that, mm-hmm. you know, my partner's not going to lead me over a cliff, or you know, metaphorically, not really, we're not talking about it, but this idea and the learning to give into that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. Yeah, that's such an important point to consider. There has to be trust. Mm-hmm.
And interestingly, because I know you're talking about ballroom dance, and I actually have spent a lot of my life doing ballet, and partnering in ballet is terribly important, especially because sometimes the woman is off the floor.
Yeah, definitely.
But what we have to learn when we're learning the dance is that we actually can't just collapse into these guys, we actually have to kind of hold ourselves but move with them. And I think that that's something in ballroom that they really, that you really feel as somebody's trying to guide you around the floor.
Yeah, definitely. You're not just a passive participant, but you're actively listening to your partner and following their lead.
Right. So it's this idea that just because somebody is leading doesn't mean that you are not participating. And then the second one you came, the second metaphor you have is seek first to understand, which when I read that, I thought that's a really interesting statement. And so can you expand a little bit on that?
Yeah, for sure. So I think I first came across that statement worded like that in Stephen Covey's 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. And it just has really stuck with me throughout my personal life and professional life. And I think it's so important because one of the most common struggles that people face and couples face is feeling misunderstood. I think it's so common in our culture today that people don't take the time to really listen, to deeply listen to others and to their partners. And, you know, we're a culture that's preoccupied with quick fixes. And, you know, we want to hear the problem in 30 seconds or less and then fix it and then move on. And as a result of this, I think a lot of people feel misunderstood. Like, it's a rarity that people actually want to listen to them. There's just working with a couple the other day, and they said one of their main problems is feeling lonely and misunderstood in their own relationship. So that piece of feeling misunderstood is a big problem. So I think it's incredibly important to first seek to understand our partner. So looking at that, it's, you know, it provides us insight into our partner's inner world, and it gives us feedback on how we can respond. So when we are on the dance floor, as we switch roles and we're really seeking to understand what it's like to be in one another's shoes, I think it just gave both of us just these aha moments of, wow, this is actually a lot harder than it looks to be in this role. Maybe I should have a little bit more patience for you. Sorry that I've, you know, gotten a little short with you at times for not having it perfect yet. So, yeah, getting more patience and then gives us just additional feedback on how we can be supportive of our partner.
Yeah, it's interesting because I talk a lot of times when I'm working with my clients about taking a position of either curiosity or confusion because you know, because something is very clear to us but isn't necessarily clear to our partners, and it's kind of like if we what you're talking about, just taking a moment and being patient and saying, you know, hey, can you tell me a little bit more about that? Or wait a minute, you know, I was following the conversation until this point, and then I got lost. And can we just back up? And like you said, it's a lot of we don't seem to take the time or make the time because the one of the biggest buzzwords now is pride of a badge of honor is, you know, how are you? I'm busy. I'm really busy.
It's like, yes, it's so true. Yeah.
And it's like, what would help us stop and slow down? And if we think about it, when we first get together with our partners, we spend a lot of time talking and listening and finding out about this other person. And that shouldn't stop if we've been together for a while. I mean, I've been with my husband for over 30 years, and sometimes he'll say something, and it's like, who are you? Where did that come from? You know, it's like after 30 years, I should know everything about you. But either it's something that's never cropped up. You know, we've never had that experience or reason to have that conversation, or it actually is something new because we're not the same people we were when we met.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, it's such a great point there. Yeah, we change over time, and so it's just this continual process of checking in and trying to understand our partners. And that could be multiple times throughout one conversation.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I love that seek first to understand, because a lot of times mm-hmm. we make, and this is where I call them the, you know, assumptions or the gremlins of relationships, and we all know mm-hmm. what happens when we assume, is that, mm-hmm. you know, I'm assuming that this is what you mean, or I'm assuming that this is what you want, without first doing this seek to understand, is this really what's going on mm-hmm. with you? And if it's...
Yeah.
And if it's different from my experience, can I just stop and try to understand where you're coming from? I think that's great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so powerful.
This is Happily Ever After is just the beginning on WebTalkRadio.net. I'm Leslie Dorries, and I'm having a really interesting conversation with my guest, fellow marriage and family therapist Hannah Eaton, about how marriage can be treated like a dance. And if you and your partner are having trouble getting in step, I encourage you to take a moment and send me an email or give me a call and take advantage of my free, no obligation, Create Your Happily Ever After Marriage Breakthrough Session. You can reach me at area code 919-924-0463. Again, that's 919-924-0463. Or you can send me an email at Leslie, L-E-S-L-I, at foundationscoachingnc.com. That's F-O-U-N-D-A-T-I-O-N-S, coaching, N as in Nancy, C as in Charlie.com. Now, I want to get back to this conversation of marriage as a dance, because I don't know, probably most of you don't know that I've spent 30 plus years dancing. So maybe that's what got me into doing the couples work. But the next connection you talk about is synchrony through balance and understanding. So now we're back to that understanding word, which I love. But what do you mean by synchrony, and why is balance important in all of this?
Sure. So I wrote about this in my article, but I initially thought that balance meant a lot more related to, you know, you do this, I do that, and there's a 50-50 split in terms of you know, household chores and the planning dates and this and that. And I quickly realized that's actually not so healthy. There's actually a lot of research out there that shows this quid pro quo approach.
And that turns into scorekeeping.
Exactly. Scorekeeping is actually quite ineffective. So over time, my notion of balance has really shifted. And I like to think about it a lot more in the sense of basically taking the time to understand your partner and operating out of a way that you're really leading with their best interest, and you're finding ways to just act in a way that really serves their best interest. So I'm thinking about how synchrony can really occur naturally when we take the time to understand one another. It can really provide a sense of freedom and peace in your relationship as you take the time to understand one another and feel known by your partner.
Okay, so I do have to stop and ask, because I don't know if you hear all the yelling and screaming from the listeners about... Well, what's wrong with splitting chores 50-50? Isn't that what we're supposed to do? And what does it mean if I end up doing more than my share?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I think it really varies for different couples. And I think we all go through different seasons, too, personally in our relationship. And I know there have been times in my own marriage where it's appeared maybe imbalanced if you look at the score of things, where maybe my husband was doing more cooking and cleaning while I was working longer hours. And and I honestly felt kind of bad about it for a while. But in a healthy relationship, I believe that our partner's there to support us and recognizes that there are different seasons and that we're supporting our relationship in different ways. When you go about it in a way that you're trying to keep score, it's really damaging, because, one, it's going to be rare that it is exactly 50-50.
Right.
And then if it's not exactly 50-50, we can be contemptuous and critical towards our partners and start feeling mm-hmm. resentful towards them. And the Gottmans researchers and therapists talk about how this can really lead to the destruction of our relationship when we bring in contempt and criticism, and mm-hmm. Bitterness really builds up. So it's more detrimental, actually.
Right. And people don't understand, you know, because we, again, metaphors and things are, you know, supposed to be equal or, heaven forbid, fair. I always tell people, you know, we have our state fair is in October, and I said the only place that I know where fair is on this particular street in the week and a half in October. Then there's fair, but other than that, and it's people don't really know how to talk about how I feel. Maybe I'm not feeling appreciated, or maybe I am overwhelmed by everything. And one of the most important times, and you're talking about seasons. And one of the times that couples really need to stop and figure out what their life is going to look like is when they bring children in, because you've got this completely helpless individual, but you don't get any more time in your day. So something's mm-hmm. got to give, and everybody keeps trying to do the same thing, and suddenly, and you can't. And then everybody's wondering, well, why am I so disconnected? And then what happens is that a lot of times they lose the connection with their partner mm-hmm. because you've got this, I mean, I've had two of them. Thank goodness they're grown and pretty much functional human beings on their own. They don't need quite as much attention, but it's really, really hard because, you know, we're all trying to be doing this and somehow we're supposed to be able to do it all. And it's like, no, stop, sit down, mm-hmm. talk to each other, figure out what's going to work. Bring some more balance into this. And what does balance mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, certainly. And I think it can look really different in everyone's relationship. If it works for you and for your partner. But, yeah, even amidst those different seasons and times of more busyness, it's still so crucial to know your partner, to seek to understand them and help them to feel known. And, just so important. I can't stress it enough. And to show them appreciation, you know, mm-hmm. even when you're busy, there are still small moments where you can really demonstrate your fondness and appreciation for your partner that really builds up your emotional bank account, as the Gottmans
right.
talk about. So,
and sometimes it's actually those that taking the time in those little moments that actually have more meaning than the big gestures.
Yeah, so true. Right. Even if you don't have the time to go on as many weekend getaways or, you know, go on as many date nights, even taking the time to connect for 10 minutes at the end of the day and really mm-hmm. hear about one another's days, it can really go miles.
Right. And having those small little rituals, because, you know, sometimes you know, on a weekend morning, I'll get up first and I'll turn the coffee on, and my husband's awake but not fully awake. I mean, I know he's mm-hmm. not going back to sleep. So I just bring him a cup of coffee. Mm-hmm. And he's, oh, that's so nice. You know, it's like, here's mm-hmm. your cup of coffee, you know, enjoy your rest in bed for a little while and take your time getting up and don't worry about it. And it's just those little things. Mm-hmm. And I love it when, if he actually gets up before me on the weekends, he'll do the same thing.
Right,
you actually started to talk about this last connection a little bit, about leading with your partner's best interests in mind. And what exactly is this, and why is it so important?
Yeah, certainly. So, yeah, I'm definitely a firm believer that a good leader is someone who has strong self-awareness and an awareness of your partner. So uh-huh. someone who really knows their partner's world, they've taken the time to really understand their partner's preferences. You know, with the example of you and your husband, taking the time to understand that you each really enjoy it when your partner may bring you coffee in bed. That's a special little token there. So really understanding your partner's world and then leading with that in mind. You know, so it doesn't mean just, all right, I've led well because I've checked off five different things around the household and paid the bills and done this and that. But in reality, to your partner, it may mean that taking the time just to have a cup of tea together for 30 minutes is so valuable to them that when you have a moment like that, then they feel loved. So when your partner has the knowledge kind of what's valuable to you and what means a lot to you, and then they act in that interest, it can just create even further powerful connection. And it can further enhance the trust between the both of you, like you were talking about earlier on. So you really need to trust your partner to take a lead, whether it's going to a social gathering or spending time with one another, but it just makes such a big difference. And I think also, as you mentioned, in the earlier years, it may be more normal to spend a lot of time talking and getting to know one another, and then couples might assume that, all right, we already know each other. Why do we need to spend more time getting to know each other, right?
Exactly.
So, but as you mentioned, we change over time, and we change as a couple and as individuals and as professionals, and we have to continually seek out to know one another, to know how to lead in the best interest of one another.
So is leading with your partner's best interest in mind? As you were talking about this, I was thinking about being supportive of our partner's interests and the things that light them up. I mean, many, many years ago, I had a client who's, she is a writer. She still is a writer. And her husband said to her, well, when are you going to stop writing? And I kind of went, when she stops breathing? Because it's not, it's not what she does, it's who she is. And to be supportive of what needs to be in place for that to happen. And one could say this is the same thing of somebody who maybe is a musician or an avid golfer or something. And again, it's all about being in balance, but you want to be supportive of the things that, you know, what I soothe somebody's soul. I mean, you know, it's the things that, you know, it's, for me, it's dance. When I married my husband, I said, don't ask me to quit dancing because you won't like the woman who's now wandering around your house. because that's my activity to kind of, you know, get in touch with myself and just be. And so is that the kind of thing you're talking about, leading with your partner's best interest in mind, or am I off base?
No, that's definitely a big component of it. Yeah, knowing what makes them come alive and what's true to them as an individual and supporting that is a really huge part of that. I think recently I started taking a ballet class as well, and you know, it's one of those sacred evenings a week that I could be home with my husband, but he's supportive of that because he knows that it's very restorative for me and it's a creative outlet. And and so, yeah, he's supportive and leads me to go take that class. Think about it in some other ways, too. Recently, my husband's been doing a lot of personal work of kind of growing self-awareness of who he is and coming to acceptance of that. And through and through, he's far more of an introvert than I am. I'm more of an extrovert, still kind of somewhere in the middle. But I can do fine in large social situations. Big parties are fine, and you know, concerts are great. And so recently, we were at just a cultural festival here in Seattle, and I was loving it. There was great music and food and great people watching. But I quickly started to realize that he was getting pretty overwhelmed, just overstimulated, and my knowledge of him that he actually you know, needs more quiet and can get overwhelmed by these really large social situations easier, allowed me to say, you know what, let's leave a little early. Like, let's go home and have a quiet meal and, you know, cook at home. And so I was able to lead with his best interest in that way. Whereas in the past, I think I would have just gotten upset. In fact, there have been plenty of times, you know, done at parties or large social events, and I'd be like, what's the problem? Aren't we having fun? Come on. And would have pushed him to you know, just work through it. But I understand him better. I've taken a lot more time to understand that we're different people, and that's okay. And sometimes we need to do things to support one another. So it can look a number of ways.
I mean, and I love that example because luckily both my husband and I are introverts so that we don't have that issue. But I know a lot of times with my clients, one's an extrovert and they don't understand why the other person has gotten quiet or goes off and sits in another room at family gatherings. And it's not because they don't like the family. It's just they're overwhelmed. You know, and again, they may be wanting to be supportive of their spouse whose family it is or whose event it's at, and they don't want to say, can we go home early, but I need to go sit by myself because I'm overwhelmed. And that is, you know, that's leading with the best interest in mind and learning to understand, you know, taking the time to learn to understand who your partner is and that this isn't something that they're doing to you or there's no reason why you have to, you know, explain their behavior, you know, it's like,
yeah.
It's sort of like, you know, this is just who they are. I mean, and, you know, somebody that I know, her husband is perfectly fine having the family come to his house. He just is not, he's a real homebody, so he doesn't like going, you know, away to other people's homes. And so people would think, oh, well, he just doesn't like us. It's like, no, that's not what it is. He's perfectly friendly. He likes everybody. He just is uncomfortable outside of his own home. And so she's very supportive of that, and it doesn't stop her from going and doing these things, but it's okay for him not to go. And they, you know, that's something that they dealt with, and she's dealt with her family and explained that, you know, he does like you. This is just who he is, and you know, come to our house and he'll be more than happy. You know, he'll be very entertaining, but
yeah, definitely. He thrives more in his own home environment.
Right. And you know, and I think that's something that, and you said this a little bit earlier, and I can't stress it enough, about if it works for the two of you, it doesn't matter whether anybody else would do it your way. But doing it your way, you know, I mean, that's sort of like, I mean, you know, you going back to the dance metaphor, you watch people do the cha-cha or the waltz or the tango, and they do it. They're all doing the same dance, but they're doing it differently.
Right. They have their own style.
Yeah, they have their own style. It's the two of them meshing together and making it work.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, each couple's dance can look quite differently from couple to couple.
Right. But I love this. So, and we could keep talking about this all afternoon, but I do want to give people the opportunity to find out, one, to read this article because it's absolutely wonderful, and where they can find out more information, because I believe you do work for the Gottman Institute, right?
Yes, I work for the Gottman Institute and also have private practice.
Okay, so there's lots of good information. So where can they find out more?
Yeah, certainly. So they can find the article. The article we discussed today is actually the first article in a four-part series, so more can be found online. And you can find it on gottman.com, and then if you look at their blog. And then this first article is actually recently reposted to the Huffington Post, so you can look there as well. And then if you're interested in therapy or learning more about some workshops and retreats we'll be putting on, you can go to my website, which is hannaeatonmft.com, which is hannaeatonmft.com.
Thank you so much for being on the show. And what I want people to take away is that finding a productive way to think about marriage is really important for making it a success. So whether it's thinking about your marriage as the ultimate team sport, which is one of the ways I talk about it, or as an intricate dance, finding a way to make sense of it is the way to make it last. So keep listening to the show for more ways to think about marriage. And until next week, stay loving. We'll be right back.